Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today is Friday, February 17th, 2010. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I will be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you would like to ask Carla a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm speaking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research. We are here every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Carla, are you with us today?
I am, Monica. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing really good. We are finally getting some well-wanted rain here in Texas, so that is quite a relief. I just hope it continues into the spring and summer, because we sure don't want a summer like we had last time. Yeah, my plants all think it's springtime. Everything's budding and flowering and opening up, and which is nice. I think we're getting an early start. So we just didn't get a winter this year at all. It's crazy. But how are things going for you today?
Things are really going well as far as the work, the service to others. I've been able to get something done that has been worked on for like 2.5-3 years by a volunteer, Jude, her name is. She lives in West Virginia, and she's been working on the unabridged version of the Wanderer's Handbook. I put that out about 10 years ago, and in order to get it into print, we had to cut it from 1,200 pages to 800 pages in manuscript. And I always promised that whole 10 years, I kept saying, I will get those beautiful quotes back in the book, you know, not just quotes from Kuo and Hatton and so forth, not just the Confederation quotes, but quotes from other wanderers about their situation, because the whole idea of the Wanderer's Handbook is to make people realize, hey, you know what, I'm not alone, I'm perfectly normal for a wanderer. So she just sent me the pre-edited, unabridged manuscript. So I have got some editing to do.
Wow, well, that is
a little slam.
Well, that's good news, because the book as it is quite a tome and very useful. I mean, I sure found it useful, and I know a lot of other people did too. So if it's going to be expanded, that's even better. So we're looking forward to that.
I mean, people can download it, but I don't think there's any point in printing it. So it'll be an e-book entirely on our site.
Well, cool. But that's even better.
That will use it from there, I know.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to open tonight's show with a quote from Kuo on channeling, and this is from November 6, 2010. Kuo, it may seem that if one could get free of the trammels of society and culture, one would, perforce, be in touch with higher sources of information and inspiration. However, my friends, this is not so. You may escape the bonds of your upbringing and your enculturation in several different ways that remove you from the box, shall we say, take you away from your accustomed matrix, shall we say, of culture, society, and the everlasting buzz. Yet simply to be out of the box is not to be directed in a helpful way. One may escape the box of consensus reality by many agents of intoxication or mind alteration, and yet without the discipline of a tuned mind and a knowledge of who you are, being out of the box is the same as being inside the box. except that there is a greater risk of confusion and being overcome by aspects of one's state of mind that are deleterious. Consequently, we would not advise working with alcohol or drugs in any sort of aid in order to place yourself in a more spiritually rewarding position. That which can be done, however, is ample, and we would address that which can be done now. We would talk about three things. Firstly, we would talk about tuning. Secondly, we would talk about challenging. And thirdly, we would talk about the techniques which can be used to move into conversation with your guidance system by whatever name you call those inner guides.
But the whole reason that I chose this is because of the passing of Whitney Houston. It's just another one in a terribly long, seemingly infinite series of people with a performer's lifestyle that took too much of something and it didn't work with their bodies and their bodies had to give way. And they moved on to another experience inadvertently. I sincerely doubt that anything was done to her, either by herself or someone else. And even if that proved to be true, which I doubt, I think the simple truth of it is all too many of our beloved performers through the years, in any one decade, you can look at the number that have passed because of the performer's lifestyle and its excesses. It's simply a continuing suspicion on the part of many sensitive people, performers, artists, you and I, that surely there is a shortcut to getting closer to the truth, becoming more open to beauty, to that which is more real. If only we could take a little of this, a little of that, and improve the odds. And, of course, as a counselor, I've counseled a lot of people who were attempting to pick themselves up after a devastating problem with substance abuse. So I think it's really important to say if you want to become more spiritualized, if you want to become more able to hear those truths that are too deep for words, the way not to do it is to indulge in alcohol or drugs or prescription medication that is beyond that which you need because of a certain physical problem. That is the way to remove yourself more and more away from the ability to sense that which is truth. The reason that it is so dangerous to access drugs for those who sincerely want to serve is that when you are taking a substance like LSD or marijuana, or I haven't had most of the medications that are substances that people use these days. I just haven't. But others, infinite others, the reason that it's dangerous is that it does open up your consciousness and makes your consciousness more transparent to a larger number of ways of seeing reality. And you begin when you're high to feel that, oh, well, if I just thought like this all the time, I would be in a much better position to know that which was spiritual. But the problem is that you then come down. That is inevitable. You can't stay high forever. And when you are attempting then to use what you know because of your experiences with the substance, you haven't learned how to use those experiences. You haven't earned the right. And consequently, you will end up burning a hole in your aura at some point of weakness that is going to be uniquely yours. I don't know what chakra, I don't know exactly how, but that's almost predictable. You can just see it waiting to happen for people that are stoned and happy, and then they try to use that information that they've gotten while they're high. And in that attempt, they are unable to be skillful because they simply haven't opened their hearts and their minds in a way that they know how to do again. So the first thing that you want to do if you decide that you are going to try to get in touch with your guidance, or if you decide that you want to become a more spiritually oriented person, is to commit yourself to working spiritually only when you're absolutely sober. I'm not saying don't ever take a drink. I like vodka. I like wine. I'm not even telling you don't take recreational drugs. It's not for me to tell you what to do. I'm asking you to be sensible about it. And I'm asking you never, ever to work spiritually when you're high. Don't do it. And if it starts coming to you, talk to a friend, have a bite to eat, go see a movie. Do something that will distract you and keep you safely in the areas of being in the box, being safely enculturated, because you simply aren't equipped to work spiritually that way. Now, that is my opinion, and I will be glad to take the hits for that opinion. It's certainly not an opinion everybody has, but I have experienced enough to know that this is a good idea. There are things, as the quo say, when you're trying to seek higher sources of information, there are three things that they talk about. They talk about tuning yourself, just as if you tune an instrument, you tune your consciousness. You talk about challenging spirits. If you feel that you have a spirit on the line, you challenge that spirit on the basis of that which you believe with all your heart. And thirdly, you can talk about techniques that can be used to create a good, safe, solid atmosphere in which you can proceed with discussion and conversation with higher sources of information. And as a person that has been channeling since 1974, I've got a lot of experience in doing that. Fortunately, although in my youth, I certainly tried many different things, most of which are not even used anymore. There's so many sophisticated things that I haven't tried now. But I tried things in my time to see how they were. For the most part, I was quite disappointed. But that's neither here nor there. I'm only saying it's not important to feel that you are perceiving well. It is only important, and this is the key, it's only important to intend with all your heart and mind and soul and strength to serve, and to serve through the intention of sharing information of a spiritual nature. When you set your mind to that and you set your intention to be as pure, then you are in a very solid position to be able to help. Now, we all have limits. We all have our differences, and not everyone is going to get precisely the same source of information when he opens up to sources of higher inspiration. And that is why the first thing you have to do when you're working spiritually is to know yourself. Because you're going to have to tune yourself. You're going to have to challenge spirits. And those two things are almost impossible to do unless you know how your instrument is tuned well. It's fairly mechanical with an oboe, a bassoon, a harp, a piano. You tune by ear. You adjust the reeds, you adjust the string, you adjust the wire, until it rings at a certain number of times per minute and says, yes, that's concert A, that's 440. You have that kind of reliability in your system, but you have to find it. So you have to know, are you going to tune yourself in the way a Buddhist would, in the way a Christian would? If that doesn't work for you, what does work for you? And most of all, you will need to challenge according to something that you utterly believe. And if you don't believe anything, then you're in trouble. In metaphysical things, what you believe is who you are. When you say, I am a servant of the Most High Creator, and I wish with all my heart to serve that Creator by serving those who share creatorship with me, which is everybody, and I offer myself as a channel for those sources of information that match this vibration that I come in. This is who I am. And then you wait until you find a vibration that matches your vibration and you've made a good contact. Then you challenge in the way that you challenge, in the name of Christ, in the name of the Buddha, in the name of a principle. And then you are able to move on from there. But to approach the gift of channeling, or even to be an everyday regular person who, by the way, is already channeling everything that he says in a certain sense, you really need to focus on knowing yourself and knowing who you are and whose you are, knowing where your springs of faith come from, what inspires you, what brings you to that point of tuning where you have something to offer that a higher source of information and inspiration will find helpful. Thanks for letting me talk on that, Monica, and I can only hope that this time I will hear you when I stop talking.
Yes. Do you hear me now?
Oh, good.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, in regarding what you just said, that was very good information. And as someone who did actually do a lot of stuff back in the 70s as a teenager, as most of us did, I have two questions about what you just said. Number one, do you think that some of these drugs, you know, like marijuana and LSD, open the person up to a state of mind in which they are more open to channeling and maybe greeted by other entities? And the reason I ask that question is because I quit smoking pot 30 years ago, but I went back a few years later and did it a couple of times, and I felt like almost like there were entities on the periphery of my consciousness trying to contact me. And at the time, and this was again many, many years ago, at the time I thought, you know, this isn't fun. It's not like I remembered it when I was a teenager. And I just never did it anymore. Could you explain what you mean by the holes in the aura, and why would smoking pot, for example, cause holes in the aura? And would that likely happen only based on the state of mind they're in, or do you think that could happen anyway, even to someone who gets great joy from the experience and seems fine with it?
Okay, the first question, do some people find that they are more sensitive to higher sources of information when they smoke or when they imbibe? Yes, I do. And that is exactly why it's dangerous. It's not dangerous to most people. This is the second question. It's not dangerous to most people because most people are not that sensitive. Our culture does nothing to wake people up, spiritually speaking. They do the culture, the media, the buzz. It does everything that can to shut you down and make of you a mindless, robot-like consumer. You are useful to the society insofar as you purchase things that you have been convinced are needed and necessary, or just because you want them. And you're not, according to our society as it is, the way it works, you're not valuable simply because of who you are. So most people, they have not been encouraged to open up their springs of inspiration that we all have. And so gradually they just let them close. And if you don't use it, you lose it. So for most people, it's probably not at all dangerous. The danger comes when you find somebody that is actually pretty sensitive, like you are. And when you went back to smoking as a more mature spiritual person, we won't debate that. you discovered, oh, well, yeah, I'm aware, you know, now I'm aware of that, of some of the more specific things that were occurring when I was high, and it isn't fun anymore because it's not carefree. It's not just a good social time. It's not just enhancing my experience. So for most, basically 90% of all people in our society, because they aren't encouraged by the society to be sensitive to the inner voice, it's probably a safe thing for the most part to imbibe or to smoke or whatever to a certain extent. Anybody, if you take your body beyond that, which is it can stand, it's going to go. It's either going to put you in a mental state or it's going to take you right out of this incarnation. And we've seen that all too often. But occasionally, someone is not particularly sensitive, but on the other hand has an incredible experience that is such a mind-blowing thing that the damage is done just the one time. You know, there's no going back. And the hole in the aura is there. Now, what is a hole in the aura? Well, you have to understand the way Confederation thinks, or the way Drunvala Melchizedek fans think, or the way Buddhists think. There's a lot of the world that believes that we have an electrical body that moves up the spine, up our physical spine, but it's electrical in nature, and it has points of focus called chakras. And the chakras are the same number as the rainbow: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. The heart chakra being green in the center of everything, and the lower chakras red, orange, yellow, involving sexuality, survival, personal relationships, and family and birth and work relationships. And so usually that is where one gets into trouble, is in somewhere in those lower chakras, something happens which distorts vibration to the point where it can't go back the way it was before, which means that it's now leaking. It's leaking energy, it's leaking power, it's leaking electricity, to be specific, because it's an electrical body. And it's possible to have that kind of thing happen and then heal from it. But in order to heal from it, you have to be willing to go through a long period where you simply work with great love with yourself to darn those holes in the aura. I had a friend, for instance, he's passed now because of cancer, but 40 years ago when I was a kid, he was a kid, and he was always high. I mean, that was just, he got up in the morning and he was immediately high, and I never knew what he was on, but I knew I could depend on Ralph to be on something. But Ralph pulled himself back at one point. He scared himself. He mended the hole in his aura, which happened to be a yellow chakra hole, by penetrating all of the yellow chakra duties and honors that we have as a human being. The birth family, he mended his birth family relationships. He mended his marriage. Actually, he dissolved his marriage, but it was necessary. It was a way of healing it. And he healed his work by finding work as a person that gave counsel to those who were having trouble with substance. He went through to get his master's degree in psychology and become a licensed psychologist so that he could do this for a living. And he was just wonderfully effective as a counselor because of the fact that he'd been there and done that, had the T-shirt. So there wasn't anything anybody could tell him that was beyond his awareness. And he was able to help other people heal, too. So it's not that it's just the worst thing in the world that could happen. And I would never tell people not to enjoy themselves. But I definitely do feel that it's one of those things that's a serious choice for a spiritual person. And as for myself, at this point in my life, I'm not taking or drinking anything because of the fact that I'm dealing with some of the deeper levels of spiritual service, and I really want to be focused. I really want to be me, and it's an important time for me to have my feet firmly on metaphysical ground. So I have found it to be the way to go. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. It led to another question, which I'm sure other people are wondering. How would a person go about ascertaining that they have a hole in their aura?
Well, when people experience a hole in their aura, they generally say they've had a bad trip. And if you've had a bad trip, and especially if it recurs, and if you find that that which was working for you before isn't working for you now, it's not fun anymore, you could pretty well guess, well, there's been a little bit of damage there, so it's time to pull back. It's time to go a different way. It's not a subtle thing. If you have a hole in your aura, things are going sincerely wrong. And you can feel your power just going away, and your mind, your faculty of mind, not being what it should be. And you don't even know who you are. You don't feel like yourself. Well, it's because that there is, it would just be like if you broke a vertebra and, you know, you're having trouble with your spine. You know, it's the same kind of essential connection, but it's in the electrical or etheric body, which makes it much more important in that the inner bodies, the bodies of the chakra, the electrical body, that's the form maker body. That's the body that tells us how to heal ourselves, tells the body how to heal itself. We came in with a series of specifications. They didn't reside simply in the physical DNA, in the cells. They reside most of all in the electrical body. The electrical body has the blueprint. So you don't want to mess with the blueprint. And that's why it's so central to treat these substances with enormous respect and with avoidance, actually, if you find yourself in any trouble with it. I want to tell you, Monica, I'm hearing bits of static like I heard before I lost you before.
So, yeah, I am too. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay.
I'm screwing up my everything is plugged into everything as hard as I can make it.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, so far so good. So,
yeah.
Well, what you said really rang true for me because I did have a bad trip when I was about 18, and I was pretty messed up emotionally for a good year after that. But it is good news to hear that it can be healed. And what I'm hearing you say, it's not that every person who smokes a little weed in the evening is necessarily going to be poking holes in their auras. I've heard some psychics and New Age gurus, you know, who have that opinion. They say, oh, if you even get high once, you know, forget it. Your aura is messed up and there's no fixing it. And I thought, gosh, you know, that doesn't sound right. So I'm glad to hear that it can be fixed, but it's certainly not something you want to do intentionally. But I will say I had a really bad trip at the age of 18, and it was probably the most horrible experience of my life. I had no idea what I was getting into. So that's good. But yeah, I've done a lot of healing since then. So I'm glad to hear that. So what's your answer to my question about how to know if you have a hole in the aura basically is looking at your life and the issues and the challenges and the catalysts, because not everyone is clairvoyant and can just look at the aura and see it just like that, but I'm assuming some people can do that.
I suppose some people can, but that's not necessary, because if you actually have a problem with a hole in your aura, then you're going to feel it. You're going to have lots of really obvious things happening to you, that if you tell somebody that's familiar with this kind of situation, just find somebody that's used to dealing with substance abuse people, and they will have heard it 1,000 times. And there's nothing nuanced or subtle about this. It's like slamming yourself in the face with a big brick wall. You don't have to worry if you think, well, I feel a little funny. No, it's a lot more than that.
Okay. Well, I think we will move on. We actually have a question from someone in the chat room from Marilyn. Asks, is there such a thing as a life review, and what is its purpose? How does it help me to serve?
Marilyn, there is such a thing as a life review, and there are two kinds of life reviews. There's the life review that you get when you review your life, which is, you know, not a system of therapy. And then there are people that are trained in rebirthing and study reviewing the life and studying how to heal those things that occurred in the early life that have created pain for you in your life to come. The reason that it might help a person to go through a life review or a rebirthing process is simply that if they are experiencing some difficulties in being of service, they are experiencing an inability to hold themselves on track. For instance, if they find that their temper is such that they really can't depend on being able to hold it, if they haven't been able to discipline their personality, if they haven't been able to clear the personality so that they may serve without prejudice and without losing compassion because of irrelevant details, then they might want to go after this pain, not simply because it would help them to help others, but because there is a value to being free of pain in your dealings with yourself. I have always said that it is important to fall in love with yourself at some point. It's not that easy to fall in love with yourself if you're honest with yourself sometimes, because you know what you're thinking all the time. And you know that a lot of your thoughts really don't bear the light of day. That somebody cuts you off on the road and there's nothing April and May about what you think. It's mean and it's petty and it's vengeful. And I certainly have those temptations every time I get behind the wheel of a car and somebody does something idiotic to me. But there is a great value in being able to discipline the personality so that you are able to retain your perspective and retain those values that make it possible for you to see other people on the soul level. We all have different levels that we function at, and if you are swayed by this or that about a person's details of life, then it's possible that you might not be able to serve that person because you're too busy reacting to that person. You need to get to the point where you simply accept that that person is part of the Creator and part of you, and you love that person as you love yourself. And you're going to interact with that person in such a way that you offer service to the Creator by holding that person as a soul, and seeing that person as a soul, and serving the Creator within that person. So there's great value in getting yourself on your own two feet and getting started disciplining the personality so that you can depend upon yourself and others can depend upon you to be compassionate. Marilyn, I hope that helped.
Yeah, I got some feedback from Marilyn in the chat room, and she said, yes, it did. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
We have another question. We actually have a question from Ansel in the Bring Forth forum. And by the way, if anyone just joined us recently, you are listening to In the Now Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. And if you would like to call in and ask a question live on the air, you can join us by calling 646-595-2294. That's 646-595-2294. Be sure and press the 1 key when prompted, or you can join us in the chat room at blogtalkradio/LLResearch. Okay, our question from Ansel from bringforth.org, which is our discussion forum, bring the number 4th.org. Question, relates to the purpose and destiny of the human soul energetic. Is the soul a creation of our universal logos as an experiment in potential, or is it a creation of our eternal Father, cause of all causes? Was soul designed to potentially progress so as to eventually exist as an independent energetic, i.e. as an intelligence no longer dependent upon its indwelling divine presence as the source of its life? When we commune human soul to spirit with the divine presence within us, are we knowing a literal holographic spark of the one divine being, or are we in contact with a more refined energetic of our own multidimensional soul beingness? I believe this is similar to a question Jane Roberts of the Seth Books was exploring just prior to her passing. Thank you, Carla, to you and your associated spiritual family for the purity of the service provided over long years. From Ansel.
Well, thank you, Ansel. I appreciate the kind words. You ask whether the soul is a creation of the Logos as an experiment or if it's a creation of the Father. And I would say that there's a bit of both in the truth and not a whole of either. It is my understanding that the creation of a being is the creation of an opportunity, and in that way, it's an experiment in potential, as you said. But also, because of the fact that all things are one and that we are all part of the Creator, we are each an enduring entity that will remain a part of the Creator as we change and evolve. So it can't be said, yes, the soul is a creation of our logos and the sub-logos of our sun. And it can't be said totally that we are a creation of the Father, because guess who creates us for the most part? We do. We come into each incarnation with a sort of a game plan, and we feel that we need more balance in this or that way. And we set up a system of relationships and themes of experience that we'll repeat often in our lives, so that, you know, at the end of our lives we will have been through a term in school, the school of souls, the place where we refine our beings. So You can look at the outside, the form and so forth, and see obviously we're a creature of Earth. We're a creature of the sub-logos. We're a creature of the sun and how this planet grew. But the second part of your question, was soul designed to progress so as eventually to exist independently? I don't believe, in the sense that you mean it, that we have the capacity to be independent of the Creator. We're part of the Creator. The Creator is part of us. It is not a binding or a limiting factor. It just is. The progression is that which is creative about us. We are creating ourselves as we go. And I think this is very exciting to think of, that we have the capacity to use every bit of catalyst in any way that we have the ability to perceive. There are people whom I know, that perceive life to be in a certain way. And because of that, they see very limited possibilities. Then there are those who have begun to perceive in a different way. And this, I'm not saying there are only two ways. There are infinite ways. But when you know that you're becoming more spiritually viable, it is when you begin to see more and more of your life becoming spiritual or spiritualized. I'm at the point now in my life where everything in my life is spiritual. The most humble chore that I could possibly do is a spiritual rite, a ritual that sparkles because I offer it as a gift to the Creator. I go to the bathroom, and as that which is used up leaves my body, I bless it on its way. I don't let anything be unthought, unappreciated, unthanked. And the more you do this, the more joy, the more lightness, the more spaciousness comes into yourself, to the point where you're just in tune with the universe. And no matter what you're experiencing, and not everything in life is peaches and cream, you know that you're receiving the best gift the Creator could possibly think to give you today. And so my job, as I'm perceiving all of these things, is to find the most true way to respond to all of these catalysts and to create of everything in my life a beauty and a ritual and a creativeness that lifts it to the point where we are truly serving at all times. And we never simply think, well, this is just a chore. This is just silly. This is just a duty. We're always aware that we have the capacity, by the way we respond, to create our lives in such a way as to make them beauty and truth. So I really encourage you, Ansel, to spend time letting yourself drift away from intellectualized queries. I have a pretty good intellect. You do too. It's a fun thing. It's a grand tool. It's a wonderful resource. But there are many thinkers on this earth, and they have offered a panoply of ways to think about just about everything. And my feeling about most thought that depends upon the intellect and logic is that it removes from the thinker the capacity to use that intuitive Gnostic side of self. People who deal in left brain, right brain differences would say, I'm talking about the difference between linear left brain thinking and artistic right brain thinking. I'm not saying that there should be only right brain thinking. I'm suggesting that there could be a balance so that you use your intellect the way it should be used and you don't let it ride you. It is hard to let your intellect take the first place and still find yourself in a state of joy and thankfulness. If you let your intellect analyze everything, you will find imperfections with everything. You will find disappointment in most relationships and many situations. And it pulls you into the belief that because you have an intellect, you have the ability to know more than people that don't have such a good one. In effect, you are simply not bringing up the balance of your personality to match the intellect. So I would encourage you to do those things that people do when they are not cataloging butterflies and beautiful flowers. When they go walking among the butterflies and beautiful flowers, letting yourself feel the absolute exquisite beauty and perfection of every insect and every bloom. Let that feed you, because you too are a butterfly that offers many colors to the world. You too are a flower that blooms. Let that blooming be beautiful. Let yourself be beautiful.
Beautiful.
I was looking, and it seemed to me that he might find use in Ra's session 36, where Ra talks about there was a dimension in which time does not hold sway. So he might take a look at that, because sometimes inspired words from a soul that has much more of control over his words than I do might help. So I wish you everything that you seek and much, much more. God bless you, Ansel.
And by the way, we have a website, lawofone.info, for anyone that would like to browse the Law of One or go to a specific session. You can find it at lawofone.info. And that topic is actually leading into another question, but we are actually out of time. So the very next question for next week's show is going to extend that topic into a little more detail about people with mental disorders and things like autism and that sort of thing. That's actually the next question that we had on the list. But we're out of time for now. Carla, any other quick last minute, anything you want to say?
No, I just wish everyone the happiest experience they could possibly have. And see you next week. I hope that you've enjoyed this,
you know,
despite of
you
all
what?
Of our technical difficulties.
Yeah,
I'm
you know
sorry
what,
for
Carla?
Those. What's that?
Yes, we are. I just saw that we have another question in the chat room that might be something just perfect, because we have about 2 minutes left.
Right.
Quick question. Has your research led you to believe, and this is from Happy-Go-Lucky in the chat room, has your research led you to believe that documented near-death experiences are a physical experience of the body dying or a true spiritual experience?
Well, Happy-Go-Lucky, my research has led me to believe both. There's research done in the 60s in the Soviet Union that proved that when the body loses the soul, when at the point of death, there's an actual weight loss of, you know, point something ounces, and this is static. This is steady over a large number of people dying. And being Russians and being able to put everything, you know, hey, the state wants this and we're going to find it out, they were able to repeat this a lot of times. So there's a physicality to it. I had near-death experience. That is to say, they were ready to declare me dead when I was 13, and my kidneys failed. And after 2 weeks of struggling, my body just gave up. I went to another place. I got certain information. Then I came back by my own choice. So needless to say, not because of my research, but because of my experiences, I am quite convinced that it's a spiritual reality. I could never convince anyone who is not ready to believe that this spirituality has any reality. But I believe it does, and I believe that it is just as real spiritually as it is physically, and that's because we're just as real spiritually as we are physically.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much, Carla. And to our listeners, you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Leal. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org, which is LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. Thanks so much for listening in, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org. Go to the miscellaneous section and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. Or you can email me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, magicalmoons@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, February 24th at 8 p.m. See you then. Thank you.